I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Last week, my guest Frank Tolupko and I discussed the alleged 9/11 hijackers and the lack of video evidence that they ever even boarded the planes, and we talked about how at least nine of them turned up alive after 9/11, working and living in various Middle Eastern countries. This was also ignored by government officials and the corporate mainstream media. This week, the focus of the show will shift to the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, the new evidence that has surfaced, and two family members who are requesting a new investigation. The assassination of John F. Kennedy in 1963 and of Martin Luther King in April of 1968, and then 2 months later, the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, who was likely to be the next president, has changed our country dramatically. The evidence is overwhelming that JFK was not assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald, and we know, thanks to the relentless work of attorney William Pepper, that Martin Luther King was killed by a plot, and yes, a real conspiracy, of the FBI, the U.S. military, Memphis police, and the mafia. And now we'll take a look at RFK. The pattern seems to be the same. Set up a patsy, ignore the evidence that doesn't support the patsy scenario, and the American people never know the truth. So we're going to start delving into the Robert F. Kennedy assassination by reading part of an article that was recently posted on the website justiceintegrity.org, written by former Hartford Current journalist Andrew Craig, who now runs the website. He's also an attorney. And the title of the article is RFK Murder Scoop Divides His Family Media as 50th Anniversary Nears on June 5th. So here goes. Two children of slain U.S. Senator Robert F. Kennedy are disputing the official account of his assassination 50 years ago, prompting renewed debate before the June 5th anniversary. Longtime law professor and environmental activist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Washington Post reporter Tom Jackman raised the profile of the long simmering controversy with Jackman's front page Sunday story on May 26th entitled, "Who Killed Bobby Kennedy?" His son, RFK Jr., doesn't believe it was Sirhan Sirhan. Robert F. Kennedy was shot in a kitchen pantry after leaving the speaking stage at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. Jackman, a Post reporter covering law enforcement since 1998, obtained this scoop. The younger Kennedy was ready to go public in an in-depth manner after spending months re-examining the evidence and meeting in prison with Sirhan Sirhan, who was convicted of the murder in a 1969 jury trial in which defense counsel mounted scant defense. "I got to a place where I had to see Sirhan," Kennedy told Jackman of the defendant. "I went there because I was curious and disturbed by what I had seen in the evidence," said Kennedy, an environmental lawyer and the third oldest of his father's 11 children. "I was disturbed that the wrong person might have been convicted of killing my father. My father was the chief law enforcement officer in this country. I think it would have disturbed him if somebody was put in jail for a crime they didn't commit." So, from this article, written by Washington Post journalist Tom Jackman, Robert Kennedy Jr. went public with his belief that Sirhan Sirhan didn't kill his father, and is also going public with his request for a new investigation. The remarkable thing about this is that he's getting mainstream corporate media attention. And here's a clip from CBS reflecting this.
It was 50 years ago next week that Senator Robert Kennedy was assassinated in Los Angeles as he was running for the Democratic nomination for president. Now his son, Robert Jr., is calling for a new investigation of the murder. Here's Michelle Miller.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there. Thank you.
After winning the California Democratic primary in the 1968 presidential campaign, Senator Robert Kennedy left a jubilant crowd, exiting through the hotel kitchen.
"Would a doctor come right here?"
He was shot three times and died the next day. Sirhan Sirhan, a 24-year-old Palestinian immigrant, was arrested and later convicted. He admitted shooting Kennedy, but claimed he had no memory of it. Now, new evidence is casting doubt for some on Sirhan's guilt. According to that evidence, Sirhan was standing in front of Kennedy at the time of the shooting, but an autopsy report found that Kennedy was shot at point-blank range from behind. It reportedly shows as many as 13 shots were fired that night, but Sirhan's gun only held 8 bullets. That's one reason why Kennedy's eldest son, Robert Kennedy Jr., visited Sirhan Sirhan in prison. He tells the Washington Post, "There were too many bullets. You can't fire 13 shots out of an 8-shot gun."
All of a sudden, I started shaking and fell.
Paul Schrade, a labor leader who campaigned for the former attorney general, also was hit by gunfire. He's believed for decades that the evidence supports a second gunman.
The prosecution's own evidence that Sirhan did fire 2 shots, missed Kennedy, and shot me.
I want to know what moved Robert Kennedy Jr. to visit Sirhan Sirhan. I could imagine that you had something to do with that.
Well, we've been talking about this a long time. I've talked to other members of the family. One day, right here in this living room, he brought 3 of his youngest kids, and he said, "Look, Paul, you were there that night. They don't know what happened to their grandfather. Would you please tell them?"
Now, the evidence that convicted Sirhan Sirhan was pretty compelling. You had the confession. You also had eyewitness testimony. You also had that smoking gun, the weapon. And we should also point out that Robert Kennedy Jr. wants this investigation reopened.
And now here's another CBS interview from the program CBS This Morning with Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Americans are marking this week's 50th anniversary of the death of Robert F. Kennedy. The senator and presidential candidate was assassinated minutes after winning California's 1968 Democratic primary. His son, Robert Kennedy Jr., visited his father's gravesite yesterday in Arlington National Cemetery. It's close to the grave of his brother, President John F. Kennedy. The younger Kennedy then spoke with Michelle Miller about his father's legacy. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning. We met in RFK Memorial Stadium in Washington, named for the former attorney general, just over 7 months after his death. When Kennedy was killed in June of 1968, the United States was fiercely divided. Many looked to him to help heal that divide. And that's part of an unfulfilled legacy that Robert Kennedy Jr. describes in his new book, American Values.
I think my father would be disappointed about what was happening in the political landscapes in our country today.
Strong words from Robert Kennedy Jr., whose family's legacy has been indelibly marked on American politics.
He saw America as an exemplary nation, that we should know the difference between leadership and bullying, that we should try to promote democracy.
His new memoir recounts the days known as Camelot, when his family was among the most powerful in the world and the most tragic.
My family had a lot of tragedies, but many American families do. My mother always said this after my dad died, that everybody takes their licks and that there's kids in Watts and in Harlem and in Bed-Stuy who've lost their parents. They don't have the support system that we had in our family. I don't think a day goes by where I don't run into somebody and who comes up, doesn't come up to me and say, you know, I'm a nurse and I went into public service because of your dad.
Your book is called American Values. Did you mean for it to set the record straight?
Well, really, you know, one of the reasons that I wrote that book was for the, I think, the 105 Kennedy children who...
There are 105?
I think at the Cape in the summer, that, you know, the last time we counted that there were something like 105. And the majority of them now did not, never experienced Camelot. But at the same time, it's a history of the Kennedys and particularly the 40-year tension between my family and the CIA.
The Kennedy feud with the CIA was multi-generational. The family patriarch Joseph Kennedy sat on a commission that called for an end to the CIA's parliamentary operations, and his sons John and Robert Kennedy both railed against the CIA's role in Vietnam.
And actually, my father, a week before he was killed, that the first thing he was going to do was to remove the clandestine services from the CIA and make the CIA what it was supposed to be, which was an intelligence gathering organization.
It's almost if you have set up and detailed an enemies list for those who may have had it in for your family.
There was a lot of enemies that my father made, and they weren't all CIA.
Is that where the seeds of doubt were planted, that perhaps your father wasn't killed by the person we say he was killed by?
I never suspected at any level that anybody other than Sirhan Sirhan had killed my father until maybe 3 years ago.
What changed?
Paul Schrade.
Paul Schrade was a close friend of Robert Kennedy and was with the candidate the night he was shot. It was Schrade who took Sirhan's first bullet, and it is Schrade who has insisted for decades that Sirhan could not have acted alone. He's now raised serious questions in Robert Kennedy Jr.'s mind as well.
Anybody who reads the autopsy report is, it's hard to believe that Sirhan shot my dad, that his bullets hit my dad, because Sirhan was always in front of my father, and yet all shots, all the four shots that hit my father came from behind him.
That leads you to conclude what?
Well, I don't have any conclusion. You know, my opinion is really irrelevant. What's important is what the facts say, what the autopsy says, what the ballistic evidence and what the eyewitnesses said.
So you want it reopened?
I've asked for a reinvestigation of the murder.
So you've heard about the evidence that Sirhan Sirhan was standing in front of Robert Kennedy and that the shots that killed him came from behind at close range. So now you're going to hear about the new video evidence that's come out in the last 10 years showing that there were 13 shots and that Sirhan Sirhan's gun only held 8 bullets. And then so you're going to hear about that, and then you're going to hear about the woman in the polka dot dress. The interview you're about to hear is with David Goldstein of CBS News.
It was 40 years ago that Senator Robert F. Kennedy was killed here in Los Angeles. Sirhan Sirhan has been behind bars ever since. Tonight, a forensic expert in a high-tech crime lab has come up with a new theory that could have police looking for a second gunman. CBS 2 investigative reporter David Goldstein has the exclusive details.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
It was a night that changed history.
Shot in the head, definitely.
Senator Robert Kennedy, shot and killed.
Everybody else, just please stay back. Just a doctor, come right here.
Sirhan Sirhan.
I did not commit this crime.
Tried and convicted, but now a forensic scientist.
You can hear a number of shot sounds.
In a high-tech crime lab in Tucson,
equalization capabilities here,
is attempting to rewrite history.
Do you believe Sirhan Sirhan was the only gunman?
I believe he was definitely not the only gunman.
Phil Von Prague's startling revelation is based on a new computer analysis of this 6 seconds of sound. It's the only known recording of the assassination, taken by a radio reporter. Listen again. The screams are just about anything anyone has been able to discern for years. But now, by plotting it on a computer...
This very high amplitude area you see here is the beginning of the screams.
Filtering out the noise and slowing the speed... Von Prague has come to a new conclusion.
There had to have been two guns.
That's because he's identified 13 shots on the recording and plotted them all on his computer screen.
This is shot 7 and shot 8.
And in two instances, he's identified the shots just milliseconds apart.
That tells us that there had to have been a second gun firing in that pantry, because it's impossible for any individual, to shoot an Ivor Johnson Cadet 55 that rapidly.
An Ivor Johnson Cadet, similar to this one, was the gun Sirhan used. It only holds 8 bullets. The other shots, according to his audio analysis, came from an H&R 922 like this one, fired, he says, by a mystery gunman.
Should this case be reopened?
In my opinion, yes.
Von Praeg has teamed with forensic expert Bob Joling on a book about their findings. Joling has studied the assassination for more than 30 years. The new analysis backs up his theory that Sirhan fired shots, but not the fatal ones.
You're saying Sirhan didn't commit the crime?
He did not commit the murder of Robert Kennedy. He did commit a crime, but he did not assassinate Robert Kennedy. He was in no position to be able to fire his gun in order to inflict the fatal wound to Senator Kennedy from behind.
He says the mysterious second gunman actually fired those shots. So who was he? Conspiracy theorists have always talked about a security guard. But that's something these scientists can't answer.
It would be nice if my equipment was able to spew out a name, but that's not the way it works.
Well, there's already been at least two investigations into the assassination, and that hasn't changed the outcome. But both forensic scientists believe there's now enough new evidence for the case to be reopened. A spokesperson for the L.A. District Attorney, Steve Cooley, says he hasn't yet read the new findings.
And now here's the polka dot dress evidence. And the man you're about to hear speaking is Chris Plumley of Non-Aligned Hollywood. And the title of it is The Girl in the Polka Dot Dress. So here goes.
Anyone who is familiar with the Robert Kennedy assassination in Los Angeles will remember the anomaly of the girl in the polka dot dress, which is what this program ought to be about. Dozens of witnesses came forward after the assassination to say that I identified Sirhan as being seen all around Los Angeles, in restaurants and even at a shooting range, with this very attractive girl in a polka dot dress. Lots of witnesses said they'd seen this. And more crucially, a woman who had to leave the country because she was so persecuted by the FBI because she said this. She was in the pantry when he was shot, and she was by the exit door, and she said she saw a man and a woman wearing a polka dot dress, run out of the room and shouting as they went out, "We shot him, we shot him." And she made this statement, and I've got her on film as saying this, to all the FBI agents. And they ignored her testimony totally. And she was even badgered. And to listen to the transcripts of an interview she did afterwards, and the copies of the tapes by the people who interviewed her at the time, is quite disgusting. They're accusing her of all sorts of things. And all she was a witness. She was describing what she saw. Now, that woman is definitely worthy of exploration. The woman in the polka dot dress was a pivotal player in grooming Sirhan, who I don't think shot Kennedy, but he was the patsy. Rather like Oswald was the patsy. I don't think Oswald shot at Kennedy. The gun was called the Peacemaker. He would never have shot anybody at 10 yards, let alone 110 yards. And the same with Sirhan. He, you know, they took him to a firing range and made him shoot at everybody else's targets so he would obtain people's attention and he would be remembered. But the thing that remembered by all the witnesses, apart from Sirhan, was the girl in the polka dot dress. And whenever she was mentioned, she was ignored by the people who were doing the investigation into the Kennedy assassination. And she didn't appear in any of that testimony, but every witness testimony you read afterwards that I got shows that. So she was pivotal. She was a very important player in that. And I think a program discovering, and it would be possible to discover her identity, the girl in the polka dot dress would make a fascinating subject because it disproves the Robert Kennedy assassination, which I've done anyway through my documentary called The Assassination of Robert Kennedy. But I didn't go into the details of the individuals behind it, which I'd love to be able to do by concentrating on that woman. And it's possible to find out those details. So that's another program we'd like to make. So if you're interested in that one, you know where to go.
And now you're going to hear attorney William Pepper doing an interview on CNN discussing Sirhan and possible mind control. My apologies in advance for some flaws in the sound quality at the very beginning of this clip. It does improve after the first part.
Now, is there evidence that a second gunman was involved in the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy? Well, the new lawyer for convicted shooter Sirhan Sirhan says yes and is seeking a new trial for his client. Attorney William Pepper says that he's quite impressed by the findings of two forensic experts who've concluded that a previously unknown audio recording of the RFK shooting reveals a second gun also fired shots. The tape, made by reporter Stanislav Brzezinski, was uncovered by CNN International senior news writer Brad Johnson. Brad had Brzezinski's recording analyzed by several people, among them Philip Van Praag, who was eventually joined by fellow forensic expert Robert Joling. I asked William Pepper about their finding.
Well, I followed it, and I'm quite impressed with the work that they've done. Everything that I've seen and heard about their work, I've read the book that they produced as well, and I'm very pleased with this revelation and with the quality of that work.
It appears that what Robert Joling and Philip Van Praag are implying is that their evidence shows conclusively that Sirhan Sirhan was wrongly convicted of the assassination of Robert Kennedy. I mean, how do you react to that?
Well, I think that's the conclusion that one inevitably has to draw from the forensics that are involved here.
But how strong, as far as evidence goes, is that?
I think it's quite strong. They have identified the number of shots fired as being 13, from what I understand. They have calibrated very, very carefully the acoustical differences between the firing of two weapons, and that in itself is extraordinary. So that I think the scientific upshot of that is very powerful evidence.
Given that then, is there any argument for a new trial for your client?
I would say that there really isn't. We'll be pressing very hard for a new trial. You know, there is a lot of other evidence also that has started to emerge that supports Sirhan's wrongful conviction in this case.
So you'd press for a new trial, but you're not necessarily that confident that you'd get one.
Adrian, these cases, I've been involved in, of course, in the King assassination case for over a quarter of a century. What I've learned is that nothing is certain and that justice is certainly not easily attainable because the political fix sometimes is so strong that it is very difficult to overcome the predilection of an earlier established guilt. But we certainly will try to do everything that we can.
Why was he there, your client, with a gun, and why did he fire it?
Sirhan has been was hypnoprogrammed in months prior to the assassination. He does not remember at all why he was there and what he did and what happened there. And there's an indication of that, of course, and it's been commented on by a number of people who have seen photographs of him after the arrest. I've spent nearly 3 hours with him not so long ago, and it's quite clear that he still does not recall. Now, he was told that he did this. He was told that he was guilty, and so he said, they told me this. I don't remember it. I was there. I had a gun. I actually discharged the weapon. He fired 8 shots of that weapon, although 6 were fired when his hand was pinned to the steam table. So he said at the time, I guess I just assumed that I did it. Everyone told me that. All they ended up doing was trying to, as they said, tried to save his life. That whole hearing proceeded from a guilty plea, and they were trying to save his life. So the whole problem of Sirhan's presence and why he was there and firing the gun goes much further back in terms of how he was used as a patsy in this. We have now evidence about that, and we've been developing that.
So in your view, who was behind the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy? I mean, if this was a conspiracy, how large a conspiracy are we talking about in your view?
Adrian, I don't know the answer to that question. We've just begun, you know, I've only become involved in this case with a hands-on way over a course of really the last year and a half. So we don't know a lot of those answers. We do know, frankly, I think we are having leads now. Because I have become involved in the case, people have started to come forward and share information with us that has never been available before. That's the first thing. The second thing is we do know that Bob was killed with a bullet fired from a pistol that was no more than 1 inch from the back of his right ear. Now, this was evident from the Dr. Noguchi's autopsy report, but of course it's been swept aside. Bob was hit with 4 bullets were fired at him from the rear. From the rear now. 2 went through, 1 through the shoulder pad and 1 through the chest cavity that lodged in a ceiling tile that was actually behind Sirhan, where Sirhan was standing. So the shots from the senator were from behind, and the tracing of the bullets was slightly upward. So that's where the assassin was firing, and that's where he was standing, behind the senator. And we have a view as to who that person was, but a good deal more probing and evidentiary work has to be done.
How might we, those of us who are interested in this, fascinated by this case, how might we stay abreast of your efforts on behalf of your client?
Well, there is going to be litigation that will be developed over the course of really even the next couple of months. Now that's going to be separate litigation that's going to be designed for the purpose of airing a lot of the new evidence. So we can make, we can certainly make you and your colleagues aware of these proceedings and therefore of the evidence that will come out. There is a habeas petition that has to be answered, that has been pending for quite a period of time, and that finally will have to be answered on the 29th of August. So I would say over the next few months, you're going to be seeing some interesting developments in this case. And we will be trying to do a number of things with Sirhan in order to try to effectively restore his memory in a credible way so that those recollections can be introduced in a court of law.
How do you intend to restore his memory? How would you do that?
Well, there are a variety of ways that memory can be restored, and there are a limited number of experts in the world who are capable of doing this. I've discussed the process with 2 of them. Anyone who has had any contact with Sirhan and who has observed him, or in fact had treated him, as one psychiatrist did when he was at San Quentin, they've all uniformly agreed that he is still under hypnotic programming. He is programmed. There are ways of restoring the memory that involve putting him again under hypnosis, and also a process called, I suppose we can refer to it as cognitive restoration, which is possible through the use of some very skillful techniques. And we're in the process of working through that possibility. It is my hope that the Department of Corrections in the state of California, which itself is under a receivership, by the way, will ultimately not block us, not obstruct our efforts to try to get at the truth in this case. The early indications have not been favorable, I must say. But nevertheless, we are going to try to work as cooperatively with them as possible, and hopefully, we will be able to proceed in a professional manner and be about this task. Sirhan is in maximum security detention. If he were to be returned to a lower level security, medium level security, we would have much more access for these kinds of proceedings. I'm not willing to encourage him to do that at this point because I'm concerned about the security issues, and I'm frankly fear that he might be killed, and that of course ends the case. So we're having to work with him in the present situation where he finds himself, which is in a very tight maximum security facility.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s new book is called American Values, Lessons I Learned from My Family. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake-Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.